special because every show is a special over at Midnight Ravers, and they always do an excellent job on what they do. And speaking of Harry Belafonte, next Friday there will be, I think, almost a day's program focusing on Harry Belafonte. So just stay tuned for that. That's going to be next week, May 5th. All right. It is now 3 p.m. Stay tuned for Live on the Fly with Randy Credico here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. It's 3 p.m. Stay tuned.
The Iraq War famously is a result of lies. Wars in Somalia are a result of lies. The Second World War and the German invasion of Poland was a result of carefully constructed lies. That is war by media. Let us ask ourselves, of the complicit media, which is the majority of the mainstream press, what is the average death count attributed to each journalist?
That is next Friday from 2 to 10, Reggie, the tribute to Harry Belafonte. And you and I did a few. You were here.
No, I do remember.
You remember. We'll talk about it if we have time.
Yeah, yeah.
But we're going to try to get a couple of my interviews with him and give them to Linda because she's putting together a lot of the interviews at this station. I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico Live on the Fly at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. Free speech radio. Give the number to WBAI.org to support the station so you can hear this kind of programming that we are about to unveil. You heard Julian Assange talking about lies. That was from 2010. What all wars start with lies, and you can see it right now. You know, the lies that you're hearing from the media are trying to get us deeply involved in this proxy war and possibly lead to a nuclear war. But we'll talk about that later with Margaret Kimberly. Right now, I want to talk about Julian Assange and an event, Assange Countdown to Freedom, and NYC Free Assange, again, are collaborating, organizing an event next Wednesday. And Chuck Slatkin from NYC Free Assange joins us right now for the details.
Yes. Hello, Randy.
Hello.
Okay, I just wanted to let people know that on Wednesday, May 3rd, in front of MSNBC, which is located on 49th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue, from 4 p.m. to 5:30, we're going to celebrate World Press Freedom Day by honoring journalist and publisher Julian Assange. It's the 30th anniversary of World Press Freedom Day, which was established by the UN to remind governments of the need to respect their commitment to press freedom, and what could be greater way to commemorate that day than to call for the freedom for Julian Assange. And we have a few speakers committed so far. One is Randy Credico. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of him.
I don't know. Is he really going to be there?
He's going to be there in person, which is a reason enough for people to come.
Right.
Also, Katie Halper and Margaret Kimberly and Margaret Kunstler. And,
right.
It's an important event. We
and
really
others,
be
will be, others will
be.
Others will are pending. And Chuck Slatkin, you'll be speaking. Chuck, you're a dynamic speaker. That's next Wednesday, and we're doing it in front of MSNBC because they've been so bad on Assange as they have been on any other issue of any importance. So MSNBC is the right spot. We did it last year, a year and a half ago, I think, in front of MSNBC. So at 4 o'clock to 530, right there between 6th and 5th Avenue on 49th Street. My next guest will be one of the speakers, and that is Margaret Kimberly. So how do people, if they want to learn more about this, how do they reach out to you?
Well, they can reach me at 917-693-9427. That's 917-693-9427.
Okay.
Because it's important to get as many people as we can out there for this really, truly important event on World Press Freedom Day.
Okay. I look forward to being there, Chuck, and we'll see you next Wednesday. All right.
Great.
As I said, one of the speakers is coming on next. She has a show here every Thursday at 7 p.m. She's on the executive. I'm going to play some music first. It's Margaret Kimberly. So why don't we just play this music and give me a chance to drink some water here. We'll be right back with Margaret Kimberly.
That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. That's the sound of the men working on the chain gang. All day long they work so hard till the sun is going down, working on the highways and byways and wearing a frown. You hear them mourning their lives away, then you hear somebody say, that's the sound of the men working on the chain.
Sam Cooke. I could hear the whole tune, but we don't have time. I'm Randy Credico here at WBAI, and we are joined by the redoubtable, indomitable, fearless Margaret Kimberly. Hello, Margaret.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. All things considered, I suppose I'm okay. You know, everything is upside down and sideways, and the world's coming to an end. How are we supposed to feel?
Well, we do our best.
I know. I guess we just got to keep moving. Wanted to, by the way, your show is on Thursday at 7 p.m., and you are the executive editor at Black Agenda Report, BAR. I want to talk about some of your recent columns and things said on the radio, and that is, to begin with, the announcement. I guess you weren't excited when Joe Biden made that exhilarating announcement for his bid for a re-election.
Well, no. The only thing exciting about this election is knowing there will be opportunities for us to laugh. It was the strangest thing. Usually when a president announces a re-election campaign, there's an actual event. In this case, there was a video only, and that was it. And I think it's because of a couple of things. One, they're hiding Joe Biden. It's harder to hide his cognitive decline. It's harder to hide the fact that he's an elderly man, and as far as I'm concerned, too old to be president, quite frankly. But the bigger issue is what he has done, what he has not done. We're always exhorted to support the Democrat, what do we get out of it? So what did he campaign on? He's going to raise the minimum wage. That didn't happen. We're going to have Build Back Better. That didn't happen. He was never in favor, really, of student loan debt relief, so at the last moment before the midterms, he comes out with this wishy-washy, half-assed plan that was thrown out. And, you know, they just say, oops, sorry, Roe v. Wade is no more. But the Democratic Party doesn't seem to have a plan to bring it back through legislation. All of the pandemic benefit plans that were so desperately needed are disappearing. SNAP benefits, gone. The enrollment of Medicaid, gone. So people will be kicked off and won't have health benefits. So all of these things.
Well, that's domestic policy. Let's talk about his foreign policy record and what did he promise? I, you know, when he was elected, and you know, it's like people were like afraid of Trump, and so they voted for him. But they didn't know. I don't think people knew he was going to put together this neocon foreign policy team of Jake Sullivan and Victoria Nuland and Tony Blinken. And I think they have put us in a lot of jeopardy.
Oh, absolutely. Ukraine has been a disaster. First of all, for Ukraine, they did instigate this war. They were hoping to sanction Russia and, what did he say, turn the ruble to rubble, which has not happened. They damaged economies all over the world and other places. They have driven Russia and China closer together. They have countries like, and I'm no fan of U.S. Foreign policy or the establishment narrative, but I'm just pointing out that they've screwed up the things that they claim are important to them, like being friends with Saudi Arabia. Now Saudi Arabia is going to join the BRICS, is closer to the Chinese and the Russians. China has stepped in all the places where the U.S., frankly, does not want peace. That's one thing they've proven. So the Saudis and Iranians are talking again. The Saudis and Syria are talking again. The war in Yemen, there's been a ceasefire. So what does the U.S. have to show for it? Billions of dollars for the military-industrial complex. The war has reached a stalemate. Russia has seized and is not likely to be removed from about 20% of Ukraine's territory. The EU nations, they're literally out of weapons. Biden blew up the Nord Stream pipeline in an effort to separate Russia from Europe, and the good little lackey Europeans have gone along with it, and the lackey press in this country hasn't even asked any questions about it. So he's got a foreign policy that they want to hide from, and the only thing that keeps the public from rising up is the collusion with the corporate media, which covers up for him.
So he's running on a platform of four more years of this kind of action in terms of foreign policy and domestic policy. I don't know what he has to show that it has benefited the American people and certainly not the world. I mean, this I was in Russia, as you know, and in Ukraine or DPR, whatever. I can tell you this, that Russia's not letting go of the territory they've claimed. They're not, that's not going away. So I don't know what their end game is. And at the same time, they're saber rattling with North Korea and with China. I mean, this is like a drunk at a bar that's naked, has $31 trillion in debt, but has a big gun. That's about it.
What a great description. And yes, that is it. I don't think they know what to do. Nothing that they planned for has worked out. So basically, the U.S. still has the biggest military, but that's it. It's influence around the world. It only has influence with the EU nations and Canada, that and the Five Eyes countries. That's it. The rest of the world is moving in the other direction, away from U.S. Catastrophes that have been created over all these decades. But Biden, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. He was Obama's point man in Ukraine. And the Obama administration, lest we forget, they sided with the right wing in 2014 in bringing about a coup against the elected president. And Biden was the guy in charge. So he's brought back these terrible people who don't know what they're doing. And speaking of China, Biden literally cannot get Xi Jinping to take his calls.
I wouldn't take his call.
Of course not. He refuses to talk to him.
If he called me, would you answer his phone call?
I would, just so I could tell him off. But that wouldn't be for any positive benefit. They told Blinken he was supposed to meet with them after shooting down the balloon. Remember his strange rant against Xi Jinping at the State of the Union. who wants to be like Xi Jinping? Apparently everybody, because the rest of the world is Lula has been to Beijing. Xi Jinping met with Putin. Macron has been to Beijing. Everybody wants to talk to Xi Jinping,
right?
Despite what Biden's crazy statement.
Well, their record around the world the last, 20 years, 30 years, is China builds, the U.S. bombs. You know, that's our slogan, U.S. bombs, China builds. I mean, it's amazing, all these projects. I remember back in 2004, they were building a railroad from southern Argentina up to Buenos Aires because to move grain and soy. I know there's a quid pro quo, but it's mm-hmm. better than just going in and taking over the land, you know.
Blanking on the name, Belt and Road Initiative. They have these infrastructure projects all over the world. And they're, as you said, that, you know, it can be problematic in these countries. I don't want to say that China is the angel and the savior, but it shows you there's a different way of doing things. Right. But the U.S. wants to dominate. And the only solution to all of these issues is peaceful coexistence, is for the U.S. to peacefully coexist with the rest of the world. But they want to dominate economically, want to dominate militarily. And that means all of these things that make so much sense for humanity are things that the U.S. is opposed to.
Exactly. We're talking with Margaret Kimberly, the executive editor of Black Agenda Report, author and activist. You know, when people say you're a comedian, radio host, and an activist, activist is the one I want to be remembered for because I think it's the most important thing in life is to be an activist. If you're, I mean, you know, you could be an activist and do bad things, but being an activist and doing good things, and you're a great activist. You're going to be there next Wednesday at 4 p.m. in front of Rockefeller Center between 5th Avenue and 6th Avenue. And you have been one of the most fervent vocal supporters of Julian Assange. You've appeared at a lot of our events we've put on. And where are you on this? Where do you think it's going, the Assange case?
It's hard to say. It looks like there isn't any movement lately, but it's really, I mean, speaking of all the horrible things Biden has done, this prosecution of Assange began with Trump. And we were told Trump is a fascist, Trump is so horrible, we got to get rid of him. And in foreign policy, Biden has just followed him and done the same thing he has done. And so this cooked-up case against Julian Assange, they did everything from interfere in Ecuador's election to get a government in power that would stop giving Assange protection, meddling with the UK, another willing vassal to get them to keep him in jail, these spurious charges, which are just a lie. You know, and this started with Obama charging journalists under the Espionage Act. So it's really disgraceful, and we should all be defending Assange and condemning the Biden administration.
Well, it certainly sends a chill, particularly if he were to be brought over here and put into a supermax, you know, or, you know, just spending 5 years waiting for the trial to resolve itself. And then what caused another chill up my spine, just after I get back from Russia, I see these four gentlemen in I can't pronounce the name of the group. Reggie, you can. What's the name of the group?
Yeah, it's the African People's Socialist Party.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. What did you make of that? That was, you know, pretty shocking.
Well, the APSP needs to, our defense as well. The Justice Department has indicted four of their members, their chairman Omali Eshitela being the most prominent. They're accused of allowing Russians to interfere in our electoral process. I mean, they had a candidate for local office. I think it was a city council seat in St. Petersburg, Florida.
Right. That'll shake the world. Right.
Yeah, well, they're being accused of being under Russian influence. And it's really offensive. And it's, unfortunately, a long and bad history of black leftists being accused of being in league with foreign governments, as if anyone needs Russia to tell black people about our condition in this country and around the world. This is a group that's been around for many decades. They've always been anti-imperialist. They've always been socialist. They've always been black nationalist. For I believe they started in the early 70s, I think 50 years. So it's an insult to say that they've been under Russian influence. And also, you know, these indictments, they say the Russians that they were in contact with were all FSB agents, the Russian Security Agency. And they're in Russia. They're never going to be charged. So they can always call a Russian an FSB agent if their target is really someone here on the left, and they're being accused of being foreign agents. And they are raising money, and I think the website is handsoffuhuru.org. Obviously, they have a defense fund, which I'm hoping folks can be generous with, but they require our defense. And for people to say, I don't know them, or frankly, white leftists to say, well, they're black, I don't care. It's like, what you're saying is that we're not free to speak to whomever we want or travel wherever we want. If you go to Russia, if you go to some country that the U.S. designates as an enemy, you're under suspicion. And it's easy. You know, these prosecutors can, as the old saying goes, indict a ham sandwich. They can indict and accuse, and they always win. So,
what's the motivation behind this? I mean, I think I know, but what's your idea? Why them? What's the driving force here?
Well, I think it's a continuation of the war against Russia, the proxy war against Russia. They may use a nation, like use the nation of Ukraine. In this case, they will use U.S. citizens. And the fact that they always want to find a way to delegitimize the black left. So it's a long history of racism with the U.S. security state, and now this ongoing Russiagate hoax. And yes, I am using Donald Trump's words, and I don't care. That's what
it
is.
Yeah.
Especially the Democratic Party and liberals. They
liberal black leaders as well, like Clyburn and Sharpton. I haven't heard anything from those dudes.
Oh, you won't. You won't. I mean, Sharpton, I mean, what a scoundrel. You know, do we have to even talk about him? You know, Clyburn, for all this talk of him being a kingmaker, he's nothing of the sort. He's a part of he's the black point person for the Democratic Party leadership. And you have people like Gregory Meeks, the congressman in Queens.
What a hawk he's become.
Yes, he is.
And what about Hakeem Jeffries?
Oh, horrible. He was, Meeks did get this passed in the House, this Russian malign influence and rooting out Russian influence in Africa and the African diaspora and finding black people who'd had contact with Russians. It's all extremely dangerous. Yeah. And Hakeem Jeffries, he's the House Minority Leader because he goes along with this stuff. So you're not going to have anybody remotely progressive in any of these positions.
You know, I knew him when I was working on the Rockefeller drug law movement with the Kunstler Fund. He was a state legislator, and he was, you know, I thought this guy would continue. He was very progressive back then. I don't know if progressive is really such a great term anymore. You know, AOC supposedly a progressive, and of course she – let me just jump to her instead of talking about Hakeem Jeffries. I mean, she's Puerto Rican descent. What's your assessment of her shift politically?
Well, she's a fraud. She's the fraud squad, I and others call
them. I call her that, too. Yes.
The rest of these so-called progressives in Congress, they're nothing of the sort. They have no victories whatsoever. They will not stand up to their party's leadership. And so they are not worth anything more than other Democrats. And so they'll say, I don't take corporate PAC money. Well, if you end up voting like the rest of them, so what? And recently she was saying she was glad that Tucker Carlson is off the air. I don't know why Tucker Carlson's off the air, but...
I think it has something to do with Russia, you know, because he's the only one given a different perspective. I mean, a lot of his rhetoric I don't like, but on Russia and the CIA, he's been, and Julian Assange, he's been spot on.
Yeah, he has. He also has some harassment complaints, so we don't know why, but she said that she should have been deplatformed. I don't know how any so-called progressive going to say that the media should deplatform people that she doesn't agree with.
Right.
So she and the rest are phonies. They don't benefit the people at all, and they are no better than the Hakeem Jeffries or the Nancy Pelosi's of the world.
Right. We only have a few minutes left. We spoke earlier today. The situation in Sudan seems to be confusing to a lot of people. I have Afshin Ratanzi had a very good report on it the other day. Your quick assessment of what's happening there?
Well, Sudan is one of those countries that the U.S. and the West are always interfering with. The biggest problem here, though, is a coup against the civilian government a few years ago, and the military took over. And to make a long story short, it's two military factions fighting against one another. But civilians are suffering there. The last I saw today, there is a ceasefire, but both sides accusing the others of the other of breaking the ceasefire. But there needs to be a return to civilian rule. But I'll give you an example of one thing the U.S. did. Sudan was always placed on the, you know, terror list for the U.S. And do you remember Bill Clinton bombing what turned out to be an aspirin factory, claiming it was weapons of mass destruction?
Right.
That was Sudan. And the Trump administration said you can come off the list if you recognize Israel. But that forced them to pay into a fund about terror attacks that they never committed. I mean, it's horrible the way they have been interfered with by the U.S. But we should always be in favor of civilian rule and always be opposed to these military takeovers because they always end up like this. So we have two articles in Black Agenda Report this week about Sudan.
I want to read those. I know Eritrea and Ethiopia have something to do with this as well, and the U.S. Certainly is not in favor of the governments in those two countries. I have to go. People can reach you. I mean, the show is on last night, 7 p.m., and it's blackagendareport.org.
.com is we have a new issue out every Wednesday. We have Black Agenda Radio and WBAI on Thursdays. At 7. Of course, we're on Twitter. I'm on Twitter. Freedom Ride Blog is my handle. And those are some of the ways you can catch up with Black Agenda Report.
Okay. I highly recommend it, folks. I thank you so much. I'm sorry this interview is so short. I could talk to you for 3 or 4 hours. I'll see you next Wednesday, right? At 4 p.m.
Yes.
Great.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Margaret Kimberly.
Right.
I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico Live on the Fly. You know, Lee Camp was going to come on live today, but he couldn't. He has his own show on live at 3 p.m. So Kelly Lane and, she engineered it turned out to be like 45 minutes. So she edited down the sound to about 27 minutes. And you can hear the whole watch the whole thing on live on the fly. On YouTube and later on the Assange Countdown to Freedom.com. So we're going to go and we'll see you next week. Now, stick around. This is Lee Camp from yesterday. Okay, that was Dmitri Shostakovich, Sweet from a Variety
from a piece that he wrote in 1932. I'm Randy Credico. This is Randy Credico Live on the Fly here on WBAI. As I said, we are joined today by the great Lee Camp, the satirist, author, activist, and the former host for many years, I think 6 years, of Redacted Tonight, until he was redacted last year at this point in time. Welcome back, Lee, to the show.
Thanks for having me back. Actually, 8 years. Don't cut two of them away. But,
yeah. It went by so quickly, I'll be honest with you, and I really missed that show. The last time you were on this show, I think we were talking about this book.
Bullet points and Punchlines. Yeah.
Bullet Points and Punchlines. It's a great book. In fact, you autographed this one. I'm not going to look it up right now. But
that means it's worth $3 extra on Etsy.
You got to get this book, folks, because, you know, I'm just amazed at your ability to write. You know, these all, especially this new book, because they all read like a Mark Twain after dinner speech. Seriously, they're all great. They're humorous. There's dark humor in there. There's a lot of irony. They're sardonic. You're satirical. But this new book is called Dangerous Ideas. Now, where did you get that title?
Well, it is coming out. It's roughly been a year since my TV show was shut down by U.S. sanctions. At the same time, my YouTube channel was banned globally, and all the videos, over 2,000 videos banned globally, and my podcast was deleted from Spotify. So it seemed like the things I'm covering and that you often cover, Randy, are dangerous ideas that will get you kind of pushed out of the mainstream. I was never in the mainstream, but now I've even been relegated to a tiny remaining corner of the internet.
Well, wait, what happened to all the YouTube shows that you did? Do you still have those filed away somewhere else?
So I can still log into the back end of the YouTube page, but and probably get those videos. So they're technically still accessible. However, all of them have been banned on YouTube, which means anyone who links to them or searches for them will not find anything from Redacted Tonight on YouTube. Those who don't know the show, it was like a really left-wing daily show, and we did it once a week for 8 years. And, they within a week of when RT America shut down, they banned the YouTube channel and all of the videos globally, which I've heard them doing various other things, but I've almost never heard them of YouTube doing that to a channel unless it was outright Nazis or something.
Right. Well, I did the show 3 or 4 times. I'd like to get access to those, but I guess I won't be able to find them on YouTube.
You go
way back, exposing when you were exposing the Russiagate hoax, and especially the connection, which you talked about. I must mention that you did almost all of, and the first, and you were kind of the co-creator of the Stand-Ups for Assange show, and one of that routine you did about me. You know,
yeah,
Roger Stone.
I love doing those shows with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we missed the last few with you that we did in D.C. and in New York. So you've moved to Sweden.
I did. I'm back. But I moved. My wife is half Swedish. So we moved for eight or 10 months. I think closer to 10 months. And we're back now.
You're back where?
We're moving to Baltimore in about a week.
Oh, so you're, oh God, that's great. We do another Assange show. Hopefully he's out before we do another one.
That'd be nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Well, and of course, Eleanor would, we miss her. She's such a great singer. She really,
yes.
She really stole, I hate to say it. She really stole the show. The last one that we did.
Oh, she totally did. And actually, I just want to add in here, I got lucky and I happened to be in Stockholm when John Shipton was touring. And so I did the, I don't know if, I know you've met the man, but, I hosted the Q&A for him at a theater in Stockholm, where he spoke on that movie that just came out, a year ago, Ithaca.
Yeah. I did too. I just hosted a Q&A with him, I think, somewhere in Long Island, of all places, some conservative city in Long Island. I was up. I saw it three different. I didn't see it, but I was with them three different times when they were in New York. Let's get back to the book here. dangerous ideas. You definitely have dangerous ideas. And you do know that there's a wave of hysteria rocking this country. It's gripping this country. These four gentlemen down in Florida that were arrested and banning Stolichnaya. Anything Russian, it gets you in trouble. Before we get into the chapters in this book, just your thoughts on that.
Oh, yeah. Chairman Yeshitela, I interviewed him for an hour just a few weeks ago. It was before they actually charged him, but they had already arrested. They'd done the arrest, and they when they raided his house with his wife there with flashbang grenades and SWAT teams and handcuffed them on the sidewalk, despite the fact they had never asked them to come in and turn themselves in or anything. So really, the cops wanted the show, and the FBI wanted the show as if they were taking down a terrorist, when in fact they could have asked him to come in and he would have come and spoke with them. And this is absolutely the prosecution and arresting and harassment and abuse and persecution of someone, four people actually, for free speech. They actually, the DOJ kind of let the cat out of the bag in their statement, where they called what the Yehura movement has done, quote, weaponized free speech. So the DOJ admitted that they're arresting these people and threatening them with 10 to 15 years in prison for what is supposed to be free speech. It is horrific and horrifying. And I think the goal is to create a chilling effect amongst those who will speak out against the U.S. empire.
Well, it certainly put a chill in my body when that happened.
Yeah.
I'm driving up to Albany yesterday, and I'm looking in the rearview mirror for SUVs to go by. You know, they're behind me, and then I go so slow that they have to go around me. Then I'm relieved. But I'm going 55 in a 65-mile zone. But it really it is scary right now. This is like a whole new step that I wasn't anticipating.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are pretty surprised by it. But it does, to kind of see a little bit of silver lining on this, it shows how desperate the U.S. empire is becoming. We're losing our hegemony, which in a rational adult world should be a good thing. You should have a multipolar world. You should have countries with sovereignty, with their own beliefs and own cultures. Instead, our ruling elite want to rule the world, which they have in many ways for a generation, and that is collapsing, as it is bound to do when you exploit everybody to this level. And their response has been to shut down freedom of speech, freedom of thought. They're arresting people like those in the Yehura movement, and they're arresting people like Julian Assange. And for those that aren't arresting, they're just trying to crush all of their platforms, like you and me, and trying to make sure that we are not able to speak publicly. And so I just, want people to know that if someone still has a gigantic platform like New York Times or Spotify or these large ass platforms, then it's because they're not saying anything threatening to the ruling elite. I mean, that is what it comes down to.
Absolutely. I was in Russia, as you know. I just said I was there for a couple of weeks, and what's the new Russia? Donetsk and Mariupol, and I sent back reports every single day, 2-minute reports, and the first few and the last few was from Moscow, and I can't tell you how beautiful that city is. Not only is it beautiful, it's thriving. I mean, I went to markets. I was able to walk around on my own. You know, I got a friend over there who heads a band, and I was able to float around, and I saw a lot of really a bustling city. So this stuff about sanctions, first of all, having this dramatic effect, and people are standing in lines for bread or for at soup kitchens, it's just not real. And so that's one myth that they keep perpetuating out there. And the sanctions have not had any effect except for here, because I just paid a record amount of money for gasoline, and the prices in the store are, through the roof, just here in the Woodstock area, everything has gone up. Have you noticed that yourself?
Yeah, I mean, the prices have just gone crazy. Grocery stores, and especially if you want to buy anything that's not made out of petrochemicals and hydrogenated, you know, semiconductors, then you are going to pay an arm and a leg for anything healthy. Sure, you can still get a McDonald's hamburger for $2, but you can't get a head of organic broccoli for less than 15. So the prices have gone nuts. The sanctions have backfired largely. They've pushed actually something to happen that was happening anyway, which is the splitting of the world's economies, so that many countries are going outside the petrodollar, which is where the U.S. gets its strength. And they, rather than separating Russia, they really forced Russia's hand into running closer to China. 19 countries have now said that they have formally applied to be in BRICS, the kind of competitor to the U.S. central banking and petrodollar system. And it really is like speeding up the opposite of what the U.S. ruling elite wanted. And just to jump off what you were saying about Russia and how it's very different from the propaganda we get, that's the same way I felt about China. I just came back. They asked me to speak at their democracy forum in Beijing, and I was there 3 or 4 weeks ago. And like you, I was free to roam around, and I walked around Beijing for hours and hours. And it's a thriving, bustling metropolis, you know, whereas if you're here in the United States, you believe that everybody in China, all 1.4 billion of them, is under armed guard at all times. So it just goes against the propaganda if you actually see these places.
Right. And one thing I'm sure you saw as well, how clean the streets are, I believe, in Beijing, because they are in Russia. I've never seen such clean streets. And highways, no potholes. And when I was up here last week, I come back down the West Side Highway, and once again, I run over the same huge pothole that I'm surprised didn't rip my tire off. And it's like that all the way up. On the 87, there's bumps everywhere, but you don't see that there.
Ironically, we have potholes in the United States that actually go to China. So... pretty ironic. But no, you're right that the roads are pretty well taken care of and much smoother. And the way China has built up over the past 20 years is pretty crazy. They took 850 million people out of extreme poverty over the past 20 to 30 years, you know, which is two United States worth of human beings out of extreme poverty. It's truly unbelievable. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't criticisms of China, just as there are criticisms of Russia. But for us to believe all of the U.S. propaganda is really just pathetic, and it shows a fear and insecurity and an inability to think like a grown, rational adult, which is not what our ruling class wants your average American to do. They want us all to be scared and to think that everybody in China or Iran or Cuba or Russia or Venezuela or North Korea is just the tip of Satan's tongue, and it's simply not true. It's these are human beings who should be treated with respect and dignity and sovereignty, and our ruling class has no interest in doing that.
No, I'll tell you, it's really bad. You know what? You're right. U.S. has just become this desperate entity. It reminds me of like watching Gunsmoke. Some guy at a bar that's naked, that's $31 trillion in debt, but has a big gun. That's about it.
Yeah.
we have a big gun. All right. Turning from Gunsmoke, which is one of my favorite shows, Sam Peckinpah wrote for that. I want to go through some of these chapters here. And the first one, and it's like third or fourth on the list of table of contents, is the CIA has taken over the U.S., which, of course, I subscribe to that 100%. Can you give it to us in your own words?
Yeah, I go through, several examples of the CIA making decisions that clearly are not going through Congress, of course, are not really, you know, in some diffuse way, they may go through the president, but not in a true and clear way. And I also talk about the past of how the CIA did indeed take out Kennedy. And, one of the examples that I give is Truman, who actually created the CIA. He signed the executive order that made the CIA an entity. He wrote, and you can Google it and still read it today. He wrote an op-ed for Washington Post that said the CIA had essentially gone rogue, was doing things that it was not supposed to be doing, and he had great fear for what it meant for the United States. Now, that came out in the Washington Post 1 month after Kennedy was assassinated. However, the original handwritten version that Truman wrote was written 1 week after Kennedy was assassinated. So what do you think Truman was talking about when he wrote this op-ed saying the CIA had become a rogue entity that was going way outside its, you know, dictate of what it was actually supposed to be doing?
Well, Seymour Hersh says the CIA was the metal man in the Nord Stream explosion. And let's talk about Assange for a minute while we're on the CIA. I've always said it's the CIA driving the because of Vault 7 more than the collateral murder. The reason, the impetus behind the CIA making sure that Assange doesn't get out. Do you believe that?
I'd say now, yeah, I'd say that's definitely a big player. I mean, we know Pompeo, when he was the head of the CIA, worked very hard to either kidnap or kill Assange. So getting so close as to draw up plans for assassination, you know, that's how psychotic these people are, and they will stop at nothing. And they have a true kind of like vengeance thing against Assange, but they also just want to demonstrate to everyone what will happen if you dare reveal the secrets of the U.S. empire. But those secrets are so vast. I mean, tens of millions of cables that they are all classified. It's just insane what the U.S. keeps secret. And so you have this incredible lack of transparency in a country where we're supposed to have information in order to be informed voters, but we don't have any of that information. And if anyone reveals it, they get locked up and tortured.
Right. Speaking of Pompeo, I think we have the clip, because right after Vault 7 came out, this is what Pompeo said.
It's time to call out WikiLeaks for what it really is. A non-state hostile intelligence service often abetted by state actors like Russia. We know this because Assange and his ilk make common cause with dictators today. Yes, they try unsuccessfully to cloak themselves and their actions in the language of liberty and privacy, but in reality, they champion nothing but their own celebrity. Their currency is clickbait, their moral compass non-existent, their mission, personal self-aggrandizement through destruction of Western values.
Well, there you go. 6 years ago. Why don't you just rip that apart?
Oh, my God. It's so pathetic in so many ways. I love that he says their moral compass non-existence, which, of course, is, you know, a thou doth protest too much moment. He is detailing exactly what he is, a person lacking in any kind of moral compass. But also he says they make common cause with dictators. He just means that they're pointing out the crimes of the U.S. empire, and they believe anybody who points out the crimes of the U.S. empire must be working for enemy countries. But in fact, a lot of people just want the truth. We just want to know what is really being done in our name. And, you know, I always think it's important to point out that WikiLeaks never to this day has printed anything false, misleading, incorrect. It's all been proven absolutely true. So if he means the truth is bad for America, then perhaps he should sit and look in a mirror for a while as to why that is.
Absolutely. And you know, if this prosecution goes through, which I can't imagine that they'd want him in the U.S. because we're going to play this collateral murder. I play it on every show just to remind people what he exposed. And this is totally true because it's on
him. Crazy Horse, we have individuals going to the scene, looks like possibly picking up bodies and weapons.
Hey, we need to stop that. We get down there. We need to get some stuff. You see my little...
Bushmaster 7, Roger. This is Bushmaster 7, Roger, engage. clear.
Come on. Oh, yeah, look at that, right through the windshield.
That makes me sick every time I see that, you know, but I think it's important for people to see your visceral response when you see it. And I know you've seen it 100 times.
Yeah, it is visceral. It is tough to watch. I think that it is so important, that clip, because the defense of the United States and a lot of the killing we've done has been, well, yeah, a lot of innocent people were killed, you know, let's say in the global war on terror, which the estimate, by the way, is 6 million have died in our global war on terror, 6 million people. And a lot of people go, well, yeah, a lot have died, but, you know, the aims were just and good, and we were trying to get the bad guys. But that video shows this is not them trying to get the bad guys. This is them just killing people. They're killing people literally in the process of rescuing other people. And they ended up killing a journalist as well. And it goes against every defense of the U.S. military complex and the way it behaves in these countries that we're invading. So that is why that video has been so powerful, and why the U.S. empire has wanted to shut down the sharing and speaking of that video for so long.
Well, Matthew Ho was on about a month ago, and he said that's just a drop in the bucket. That was a normal procedure there. It happened all the time. I want to get back to the book now. I want to get back to the book. I want to go shift gears because we don't have a lot of time. What I like this one here. What if there was no capitalism? Tell us about that chapter.
Well, that one, so some of these are columns which came out at various times over the past 2 years. Some of them are completely brand new columns. That one came out initially in the first few months after the pandemic started, and everything had shut down. I mean, you remember these photos of beaches that were normally filled with people, hundreds of humans, just completely empty, and they were retaken by various animals that hadn't been able to use those beaches in 10 years or something. And, you know, these empty highways with birds just walking around on them. And so the article says, like, you know, we've been given a glimpse of what this world would be if we all just chilled out and if there wasn't so much, you know, this pandemonium of growth, which, you know, to grow infinitely on a planet with finite resources is death. It's how cancer works, is to grow until it kills the host. So anyway, I say we're getting a glimpse of something special, even if it's during a horrible time. And, you know, I then go on to talk to detail some of, you know, how capitalism works. And the gravity of capitalism is always towards this infinite growth that is killing us and killing the natural world.
The name of the book is Dangerous Ideas. When is it? How do people get that book, by the way?
So right now it's just an ebook. I'm not printing hard copies for the moment, and it is available at leecamp.net for anyone who becomes a member over there. That for now, that is the only way to get it, is leecamp.net. Maybe in the future it'll be on e-reader platforms, but for now, leecamp.net.
Highly recommended. Now I want to go to this other one, How America Created Fascism.
Well, I talk about how inequality can often lead to fascism, and I, you know, give a bunch of examples, and then really I go through the mass inequality that we're seeing in the United States right now. We have, you know, the term for the number that shows a level of inequality in a country is the Gini coefficient, and our Gini coefficient is higher than ancient Rome when it was collapsing. So we have just epic inequality. So, you know, 3 human beings in America have the same amount of wealth as the bottom 50% of the country. 64% of Americans say they have trouble paying for basic necessities every month. It is truly unbelievable, to the point where America is now also the number one exporter of paid blood donations. People are giving blood, in almost exclusively poor people, in order to get $30 or $40 per donation. And most countries make that illegal. And so the U.S. has literally become a vampiric state. It is sucking the blood of the poor for the rich.
If there wasn't so much alcohol in my veins, I'd be doing it right now. Right, so I'd get another pint. Lee, I'm going to leave it at that. And I want to thank you. Once again, Lee Camp, the name of the book is Dangerous Ideas. How do people follow you? Tell us once again how to get the book online and all of that stuff.
Thanks so much, Randy. It means a lot to be on. LeeCamp.net is the site. Now, LeeCamp.com is also my website, but the site where you can get the book is LeeCamp.net. And anybody who becomes a subscribing member, which is just $1.50 a week, gets the book for free. And it's there, LeeCamp.net. And that's where all my other videos are as well. I'm also on Twitter at LeeCamp.
I owe you $1.50. All right, so we're going to go. Don't go anywhere. We're just going to play our exit music, segue music to the our closing remarks. This is pretty apropos. And this is Barry McGuire. I'm sure you've heard this a lot recently.
You're toting, and even the Jordan River has bodies floating, but you tell me.
WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York. I am Chris Bangert Drowns with some brief news headlines. Fighting continued in Sudan's capital Khartoum today, despite both sides in the conflict agreeing to an extended truce. Turkish officials said one of its evacuation planes outside Khartoum was hit by gunfire, but no casualties were reported. The Associated Press cites local doctors who say a number of medical workers have been kidnapped by the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces as they apparently struggle to treat wounded soldiers. A wide range of countries are attempting to mediate peace between the paramilitary group and Sudan's armed forces, which have been fighting since April 15th. Food and water have become scarce, and the United Nations has reported at least 512 people killed, a likely significant undercount. At least 23 people were killed in Ukraine today as a barrage of Russian missiles and drones struck targets around the country. 21 of the deaths, including three children, were from missile strikes on an apartment building in a central Ukrainian city. 17 people were wounded. Authorities said missiles and drones were intercepted around the capital Kyiv. Last week, Ukrainian officials said they received a delivery of U.S.-made Patriot missiles to protect Kyiv, but it is unclear whether the system was in use today. In domestic news, in a win for the GOP, the North Carolina Supreme Court today tossed out a prior ruling against gerrymandered voting maps, opening the door for the Republican-controlled state legislature to redraw maps ahead of next year's election. The state Supreme Court also reversed an earlier decision that had struck down a voter ID law as racially biased. The court, which became controlled by Republicans this year after the election of two new justices, is taking the unusual step of revisiting decisions made by the court's previous iteration, which had a Democratic majority. The court today also overturned a decision that had sped up the restoration of voting rights to convicted felons. A federal appeals court yesterday upheld several Republican-backed voting restrictions in Florida, overruling a lower court judge who had found the laws intentionally discriminated against black voters. Among other things, the restrictions put new limits on the use of absentee ballot drop boxes and set new requirements for voter registration groups. Indiana lawmakers yesterday gave their final approval to a bill that could make it easier to ban books from public school libraries. The bill would require school libraries to publicly post a list of books they offer and provide a complaints process for community members. It then opens schools, teachers, and librarians up to penalties if a parent disagrees with material available in a school library. New legislation that would have resulted in a near-total abortion ban or severely restricted access to the procedure failed to pass the legislatures of both South Carolina and Nebraska yesterday. It's a victory for abortion rights activists in the two Republican-controlled legislatures, and may be an indication of growing Republican awareness of the unpopularity of anti-abortion measures among voters. And the GOP-controlled House of Representatives passed a bill Wednesday night that would raise the U.S. debt limit by $1.5 trillion in exchange for large spending cuts and restrictions. The bill, passed in a 217-215 vote, is certain to fail in the Democratic-held Senate, and President Biden has also threatened a veto. Biden has refused to negotiate on the debt limit, saying lawmakers must address budgetary issues separately. Weather in Washington.